going on, people? It's a Friday morning. It just started to rain here in the city of Jacksonville. We're finally getting some rain. Cut a grass yesterday. It was bone dry, Graham. Graham, we got some dry grass around here. It's Friday. It's the first day of rookie minicamp. Doug Peterson speaks to the media at 11 a.m. Graham, it's been a minute since me and you spoke last time. Last time we spoke was the morning that Zay Jones was released.
Yes, and I think we spoke before he was released, right?
No, he was released after. He was released the morning, and then he got released like at... We did our pod at like 9 a.m., and he got released at like 11.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We spoke. We talked before he got
released.
Right,
yeah, my bad.
So we didn't talk about it because it hadn't happened.
Right, there was that, and then we had the new stadium deal that's probably going to get done, or it's going to be announced that they're going to talk Tuesday. And then while you were gone, you had your bachelor party. It's so funny, the national media, there's like this one person can say something and then everybody catches it. And with the Gator schedule, it's like you look at the schedule and you look at everybody in the beginning of the season. The Gators play in no order, Miami, Texas A&M, Mississippi State, UCF. All those teams had a record of right at 500, which if you look at it and you just look at the team, the logo, you think it's a lot better, but I don't know. We'll get into all that. But Graham, let's start with rookie minicamp. I'm not, and we don't have to go long on this. Rookie minicamp is kind of hard to judge anybody just because the only people that are practicing today are in the next week or so are the guys that were drafted, Jarvis Landry, and the undrafted guys. So you can't even run a full team. You can't even go a full 11-on-11. I don't even know if you could do a 7-on-7. But you can learn some things about some guys and get an inkling on what they can do. You can put your thoughts in the memory bank and see what they can do. And then you can, look for and say, okay, I have my eyes on this guy. This guy didn't look the part. I'm not going to be one of these people that's going to be, tripping. It's still something that you can look forward to in the next couple of weeks, the next couple of months. Again, you're not going to have a full 30, 40 guys. It's only going to be the 6 or 7 guys that were drafted, and about a dozen of the undrafted free agent guys, and then Jarvis Landry, as we are getting all over the place with this wind and the storm that just hit us.
The power is coming in and out. The power is not.
Yeah.
The building's power is about the power I'm running on right now. It's about the same.
That utility bill about $100?
Yeah, dude. You mentioned a minute ago, I was at a bachelor party. This past weekend, had some work gigs that kept me up late this week. So your boy is on fumes, but we ride nonetheless.
Yeah.
To talk about some of the rookie minicamp stuff that you were just talking about, I totally agree. You can't really see much. It's not like... Put it this way. If Brian Thomas Jr. this year goes out, has 1,200 yards, he's fantastic, he and Trevor got this great relationship, he's catching touchdowns all the time, he can't be guarded, and everybody's in love with him, not one person is going to say, yeah, when we really saw it was rookie minicamp. No one's going to do that.
No.
Right?
Can you remember anything that happened in rookie minicamp last year? Like anything?
Last year, no. I remember one thing from 2 years ago for a specific reason, and it didn't really have to do with... It didn't really disprove our point that rookie minicamp doesn't really do anything. The only thing I remember from it was, and he would be the first person to admit it to you, Hayes Carline, who we've already mentioned in this podcast, he was very anti-draft Trayvon Walker before he became the pick. And they obviously pick him in 2022, first overall. First day of rookie minicamp, when he saw Trayvon in person and saw how big and physical of a specimen he was like, all right, I'm sold. So, and there's this, he interviewed Trayvon at either day one or day two of rookie minicamp, did a one-on-one, and we recorded it like we normally do with our one-on-one interviews with our reporters. And, Hayes is like a pretty normal size dude. He's not like, he's not crazy tall or short or bigger. He's kind of just a regular size guy. Trayvon made him look like a child in this interview, in this video. It was unbelievable. Probably over a head taller and just so thick and just this just specimen. So I remember just the sheer size of seeing him in person convinced Hayes that this was the right pick. So that's the only thing I can remember in the last few years of rookie minicamp being that stand out in any sort of way. A guy that's on your show all the time that does a great job for ESPN, Mike DiRocco.
D-Rock.
D-Rock says it best with rookie minicamp, OTAs, basically everything up until every football activity up until you put pads on in training camp. I'd say when you put pads on in training camp, you can tell a little more. But everything, but starting today, rookie minicamp up until then, D-Rock always says, and I couldn't agree with him more, you don't really get to see who belongs and who's going to be really, really good. What you can see is who doesn't belong. You can see, and it probably is not going to happen with, it's definitely not going to happen with Brian Thomas Jr. and Mason Smith and some of the higher draft picks. Those guys were drafted high for a reason. They're clearly, whether they become good NFL players or not, we don't know, but they're clearly athletic enough to play, right? But the later round guys, the sixth round, the seventh round, the undrafted guys, there's going to be a few guys that don't belong, and you'll be able to tell right away.
Yeah, and I mean, these guys are in their underwear. They're not in full pads. They're in their helmet, and that's it. So I'm not going to take too much from it. The other day, the proposed stadium deal is going to be announced on Tuesday. It's a step in the right direction. Now, it doesn't mean that it's going to happen. Obviously, it's just laying out the blueprint of what's going to happen in years to come. The proposed deal is for Shad Khan to pay for 50%. And I guess everybody lives in Duval County. They pay the other half.
Which is how it normally goes.
Yeah. Is it worth like $2 billion for the renovations, I think it is?
Yeah, it's basically Shad's on the hook for $1 billion. The city's on the hook for $1 billion.
And I was going to say something else. The contract is up for 2029, so a deal's got to be done sooner than later. You know, we can get into the details of what happens, you know, during the 2 years, because it was always a 2 year, 4 year thing. If it's 2 years, the Jags don't play at the stadium at all. They play elsewhere. They can do 4 years. They can play inside the stadium, but it takes 4 years to get it done. The 2 year looks like it's going to, if they do it, the 2 year is going to be the one that happens. And, you know, we can talk a later date at what the Jags should do and all the events, what happens, like Florida, Georgia, and so forth. But it's a step in the right direction that it looks like, you know, this deal is likely to be done sooner than later.
I agree. Look, I think the biggest domino has fallen. I think the biggest hurdle was, will the city, meaning Donna Deegan and her office, and the Jaguars, be able to come to something that they agree with? And they've done that. That's what this was. The two of those parties have a deal, they have details, they have who pays for what ironed out, and they agree. To me, that was always the biggest hurdle of this. Now it's obviously up to city council to vote on it. And look, man, it's pretty damn simple. Do you want an NFL team here or do you not?
And I think with Donna Deegan, I think she knows the importance of how big the Jaguars are to the city, and what
too.
It means, and what downtown could develop into, what Shad Khan's trying to do and build these hotels and make downtown and Daly's Place and make this more of a tourist attraction as compared to what it has been for most of our lives growing up.
Well, she just proved it, because she was able to get to come to agreement with the Jaguars. At this point, if the deal does not go through at this point, it's going to be because city council voted it down, not because Donna Deegan said no. So at this point, I don't want to say it's totally out of her hands, because she can obviously do everything she can, as well as the Jaguars, as well as everybody involved, to, and they're having these meetings, they're having these like local meetings they had probably a year ago now or whatever, to try their best to sway the city council voters in a positive direction. Positive direction meaning voting yes on this deal. But the hay is kind of in the barn for her and for the Jaguars. Again, it's up to city council now. If city council votes it, it's happening. So to me, again, like we were just saying, it's pretty simple for these city council and these city council voters. In theory, and there's politics that go on here. Lenny Curry would be the first to tell you that, because he said on 1010XL that he believed that a lot of city council members voted no last time to the whole Lot J development simply to spite him because they didn't like him. We're not here to talk about politics, but he did say that he truly believed that on our station, that it wasn't just about developing Lot J. I don't believe any of that's going on here. I believe that anyone who would vote no here would genuinely believe it's not good. But again, we just said it really comes down to, do you want an NFL team in Jacksonville or do you not? Because look at the last 25 years and look at cities that have lost their team. This has been why. It's been because of a stadium deal. Yeah. Don't kid yourself. It's not because of fan attendance. It's not because of win.
It's not why the Raiders left Oakland.
It's not why the Rams left St. Louis. Yeah, it's because of a politics. Stadium deal. And look around. If you're an NFL fan, look around. And you can say, I understand the people that are saying, like, do they really need this brand new stadium? And do they really need a yada, yada, yada? The answer is yes, because look around the entire NFL and they're all doing it. Okay, so Shad has this pressure from 31 other owners to pony up and get it done. And so has the Bills just had this pressure. The Titans just had this pressure. They closed deals. They got new stadiums coming. And the Jaguars are kind of the last team in line to get this done. So long as it does get done, everything's all good.
Yeah, I agree. It needs to be done, and I think it will get done. So it's going to be announced next week. It was supposed to be announced this week, but they pushed it back a week for whatever reason. The schedule release. Are you a big schedule release guy? I love the schedule release. Like, I can break down the schedule release like I can break down a draft.
I'm not quite as far as you are. I like the schedule release. I like the schedule release because I like planning trips. Mm. So I like the schedule release selfishly. But in terms of actually breaking down how this impacts the Jags, it sounds like you're a 10 on how much you love it. I'm probably a 7.
Like, most people are just like, yeah, whatever. Like, I already know the opponents. Like, it doesn't matter. I think it matters a whole lot on when your bye week is. Look at your tough games. Like, do they matter? Are they spread? Are they spaced out? Are they together? Who are the teams that you play that are coming off a bye when you play them? Like, there are so many things that factor, because you already have the over-unders already set for most of the teams if you get any, you know, bookie or casino, whatever. And it can change a little bit based on the way the schedule is. It's rumored, now again, it's just a rumor, this is not fact, that the Jags are going to play in Detroit on Thanksgiving. Graham, tell me, out of all the teams in the NFL, how many of them have not played on Thanksgiving?
Uno.
Dang, so you already heard the answer. Dang.
I've known this for a while.
I thought it was like 6 or 7 teams that hadn't played on Thanksgiving. Nope, Jacksonville is the only team in the National Football League that has not played on Thanksgiving. That is wild. I think it'd be pretty cool.
I think it'd be cool too, but not to be a downer. They're not winning that game, dude. I'm sorry.
Probably not.
Those types of games, Jaguars just don't win, brother. I'm sorry.
How many primetime games do you think they get? Not including the Thanksgiving game, and obviously they'll get one Thursday night. How many Sunday, Monday night games do they get?
So we're not counting the London games either as primetime.
Because that's already...
You're asking me, and you said excluding Thursday, you're asking me how many Sunday, Monday night football games they get. One.
Yeah, I agree. It'll be... if they're going to do these black uniforms, it'll be make it a Sunday night, Monday night, throwback unis, or if they do go black.
I think...
They'll go teal.
I think their throwback game is going to be teal, white. Teal top, white bottom, black socks.
So would you make that a primetime game?
If they have it available to them, yes. I tend to believe this year, because they had their two Sunday and Monday games last year were both at home. I think they're going to be on the road for whatever Sunday, Monday game they get, personally.
Okay. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I find it very fascinating. Not just the Jags in particular, but like every other team and what they do. Like, I almost, if I had any money, I was going to bet, like right now, Houston is a 9.5. I would bet the under on that. Indy's at 8.5. I would bet the over on that. I'm still high on Indy, and I'm still mid on Houston. Houston just has a brutal schedule, and how that schedule lines up, if you go 3-4 consecutive weeks of playing tough games and they're physical games, you're going to lose a lot of bodies for that stretch and then probably for the next couple of weeks. So you don't know how that adds up and how it goes for the season. You know, we saw with Jacksonville last year, they play, I mean, since he wasn't tough, but we saw the injuries they had for that game and then going into December, and it was like you're just relying on a bunch of guys that, you know, Montaric Brown, who played well but was a seventh rounder. Guys you didn't think that were going to play and perform in crunch time, that's what Jacksonville had to rely on. You know, and the schedule, it always, each year changes year to year. Like I'm high on Washington this year. I'm not a believer in Philly and their head coach's name that's escaping my mind right now.
Nick Sirianni.
Yes, and the Cowboys. I don't think the Cowboys have a good team, even though they've won a lot of games last year. I think Washington can easily win that division if Daniels is somewhat decent. So that's kind of my outline on the NFL schedule Wednesday. So I'll be breaking it down, and then we'll be breaking it down here on this pod next week.
Yeah. To me, the most important thing is your cold weather opponents that you have to go to. Can you get them early and play them in September and stuff instead of November, December when the weather sucks? If I was a player, that'd be the first thing I'd be looking at.
Yeah.
Because I hate cold weather. I hate playing in the cold, man. It sucks.
Yeah, so let's go last 5 minutes here talking about the Gators. I heard Greg McElroy and then Cole Kubrick came on Hacker Show. He said it on his podcast. Both those guys work for ESPN, SEC Network, call games. And then I saw a couple other outlets talking about it. The Florida schedule is not as tough as most people are making it out to be. A&M finished right at 500. Miami finished right at 500. Mississippi State, what was the other team? UCF was another team that finished right at 500. Those are your first five games, including with Samford. This schedule is still the toughest schedule in the nation. I don't think you're going to get any pushback on that, or any disagreement, I should say. But when you actually sit down, you look at the teams from last year and how they did, there's still a lot of questions for a lot of the teams that Florida plays. Tennessee has a new quarterback. You don't know what they're going to look like. Kentucky has a new squad. In Florida, although the lines of scrimmage don't look that good at this moment, DJ Lagway did look good in the spring game, and Graham Mertz looks to part, and that should mean something. Now, should your win total change based on that? Maybe. I still think 7 wins would be a good season for Florida.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if I agree about the schedule not being as hard as it's made out to be. Because the back half is just absolute murderer's row. And the front half, you're not wrong that it's a lot of 500 teams, but they're still coin flip games, man. Is UCF anything better than a coin? I guess it's in the swamp, so I guess maybe it's 60-40 Gators probably?
Yeah, and UCF's going to play up for that game just because it's in-state, and a lot of those guys that played high school football that go to UCF probably didn't get recruited by Florida.
Yeah, they hate Florida.
And
it's
that
whole
that
thing.
Whole,
it's their Super
yeah.
Bowl, man. And
we saw it in the bowl game.
I mean, did I see correctly that the lines came out for Florida-Miami?
Yeah, I saw.
And Miami's favored?
Yeah, I don't know if that's true. I tried to look up at an odds maker. I saw Miami 2.5-point favorite.
I saw the same thing.
Okay, so it probably is true. Kind of, I don't know. Florida plus 2.5 would probably seem like the play.
Here's the problem. I agree, but here's the problem. I don't disagree with you that, like, the games, it's really the games, or really what we're talking about is the games before the Georgia game and the games after the Georgia game. The Georgia game and after, because they're part of that murderer's row back half.
After the bye week.
Yeah. Most likely, at least right now, looking at on paper, looking at how teams are, and I understand a lot of things can happen up until that we don't totally know. We don't totally know how Ole Miss is going to look. We don't totally know how Texas is going to look. We don't totally know how Florida State's going to look. I understand that things can be different by the time that game gets played. But right now, Georgia and on, Florida is not going to win a game, right?
I'd bet they win one.
See,
one home game, I'd like to Ole Miss.
But on paper, they'll be predicted to lose every single
game. Yes, they'll be an underdog all those games.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and until football games get played, we have to just go off of on paper what, at least, unless you're like really putting your stamp down, they're definitely going to beat Ole Miss or whatever. I think right now the safe assumption is to just assume they're going to lose all those games. Again, I'm not saying they definitely will. I'm just saying if I had to predict today, gun to my head, there's not a single one of those games I'm picking Florida to win. And that's what, five games?
Yes.
Georgia, LSU, Texas, Ole Miss, Florida State. That's five games that I think right now most people, if you're not a Gator fan, didn't go to Florida, whatever, you'd pick Florida to lose all five. Okay. So that means there is very, very, very little wiggle room before the Georgia game gets played to lose.
And we saw it a year ago.
That means you basically can't lose.
They were good up until
they were 5-2, and then they finished what? 5-6?
Yeah, they didn't go to a bowl game.
After South Carolina, they didn't win another game.
Nope.
So yes, these front half of the schedule games are probably more gettable than a lot of people are making it out to be. But they have to get them. It's non-negotiable. They have to beat Miami. They have to beat UCF. They have to beat Kentucky. They have to beat Mississippi State. They have to beat Texas A&M. They don't have a choice, man. If they limp into the Georgia game with only 3-4 wins, Billy Napier may as well just pack his bags, bro.
Yeah, nobody's going to be able to swamp that month of November. If you're at 3-4 wins, once you come to November, it's not going to look. It's going to look like how Muschamp was toward the end.
Yes, yes.
It wasn't this bad with McElwain, but McElwain, like, there was not a lot of angst to get to the stadium when McElwain was there, even though they were winning.
Exactly.
So we'll see. We'll see. We got a roll. I got a show to do at 10 a.m. called Jaguars Today. I'm Dylan DeMarcus, Grant Marsh on the 1010XL podcast platform. Thanks for checking us out. And we'll see y'all sometime next week.
Yes, sir.